I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
The Chris Ann Hall Show.
Any varmint that crosses that lady's path has met its match. Come on!
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Show. You can find me at chrisannhall.com, K-R-I-S-A-N-N-E-H-A-L-L.com. So excited to be here with you today on this wonderful, beautiful day where we honor those who sacrificed so that we might have liberty today. And I want to make sure that this special edition honors those who are living. So thank you, veterans, for your service and for your sacrifice. And thank you, oath keepers, for keeping your oaths. But I don't want us to forget those who came before us, who secured our liberty with their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. You're going to hear all day today about World War II veterans. You're going to hear today about Vietnam veterans. I think that we quite often and unfortunately forget our Korean War veterans. It's sort of like the unpopular war, I think. I have many relatives who were part of the Korean War. You may call it a conflict, but when we send men and women to die, it's not a conflict. It's a war, regardless of what they call it. We've been too lazy with that word, conflict. Conflict is what you have when you disagree with your spouse. Conflict is what you have when you disagree over a treaty. War is what you have when men and women die. And so let's just be clear about that. Okay? Can we please? I'll get off my soapbox now. So listen, we have to remember these people who came before us and gave everything so that we could be who we are today. And we have an obligation to continue in that tradition. Problem is, we don't know what it is that we did, and we don't know how we got here. We have no idea what our obligation is and what we're supposed to be doing to secure it. How do we do that? I mean, that is evident to me when I teach. The most asked question I get is, Chris Ann, how do we fix this? If we knew how we got here, we wouldn't be asking that question because we'd know how to fix this. And so I want to start off by teaching you about one man. The beginning of our independence, the beginning of who we are today, started with just one man. No, I'm not exaggerating. As a matter of fact, our framers even attributed who we are today to this one man. This man's name is James Otis Jr. James Otis Jr. was an attorney. His father had been an attorney before him. He was well trained in the law, and he was well trained in the British Liberty Charters. If you have been through my training, you know what a British Liberty Charter is. If you have not, then you need to go to my website, chrisannhall.com. K-R-I-S-A-N-N-E-H-A-L-L.com, and watch one of my videos on the genealogy of the Constitution, or pick up one of my books. Because the British Liberty Charters are essential to who we are, how we have the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, and even the Declaration of Independence. So, James Otis Jr., his father being an attorney, taught his children about law, and about the British Liberty Charters. The British Liberty Charters were promises and negotiations between the people and the king to secure more liberty for the people and limit the power of the king. And so James Otis Jr. had been raised in this understanding of liberty, wanted to be an attorney too. He did become an attorney, and he became a great attorney, so great that he received the highest post any attorney can achieve in the colonies. The king recognized his talent and gave him the highest position that any attorney could achieve in the colonies. Now, it was his job to enforce the laws and make sure that people are prosecuted when they break those laws. Now, this is a very trying time for the colonists and for James Otis Jr. in particular, having been well educated in the Liberty Charters. James Otis Jr. was being forced, required, if you want to be soft and fuzzy about it, required to enforce laws that went contrary to his understanding of liberty and his conscience. You see, to make the long story short, Parliament is passing laws on the colonists and refusing to give them representation in Parliament. The colonists had no representation in Parliament. Parliament disagreed with the colonists and said, "You have representation because we have people in Parliament who have volunteered to represent your interests." The colonists knew how ridiculous that was. They said, if they're over there on the island making laws to be enforced over here in the colonies, and they never have to come to the colonies and live under the laws that they make, then they don't represent us. See, that's a bit of history I wish we had learned. That when the people who make the laws are not forced to abide by those laws or exempted from those laws, then they cannot and do not represent us. Well, James Otis Jr. has a particular problem with a particular law. You see, in order to enforce these unconstitutional laws on the colonists, Great Britain had sent over regular troops. Some of these laws were taxes that were imposed contrary to their constitution, mandated purchases. In all reality, that's what they were. If you don't purchase the linen, lumber, sugar, tea, paper, and ink that we tell you to purchase, if you purchase some other vendor besides the government-approved vendor, we're going to throw you in prison. And then they sent over British troops to enforce these laws, and then gave them the power to search and seize in the colonists' homes and businesses without a warrant. Warrantless searches. They were called writs of assistance. And James Otis Jr. is now in charge of enforcing these writs of assistance and prosecuting people who have been charged in violation of these unconstitutional laws. And he began to become conflicted by those laws and his conscience. So James Otis Jr. decided he couldn't do this anymore. He cannot prosecute people for violating unconstitutional laws. You see, he wasn't like your average law enforcement officer who will enforce the law because it is the law. I don't know how many sheriffs. Unfortunately, we have a remnant of sheriffs who are constitutional, but the most of them will say, well, it's the law. I have to enforce the law. And I'll remind you, that's exactly what the sheriff said to Rosa Parks. But you see, a real sheriff will act like James Otis Jr. and say, no, I cannot enforce the law. If it's an unconstitutional law, if it violates our liberty, we cannot enforce this law. That's what a real oath keeper does. And James Otis Jr. resigned his post. He could have just walked away, but he did not. He started writing articles, handing out flyers to people, explaining to them how the government was violating their liberty by engaging in warrantless searches. Can you imagine a government employee exposing the government for warrantless searches? What do you suppose happened to him? Well, he was called every bad name in the book. A traitor. Said he should be charged with treason. He was outcast in his community and told that if he didn't shut up, he would never practice law in the kingdom again. How could you call somebody a traitor who was exposing the government violating your liberty? Imagine that. James Otis Jr. didn't stop there. James Otis Jr. took up a lawsuit against the government, against these writs of assistance. It's amazing the things that James Otis Jr. had to go through. He called these warrantless searches the worst instruments of arbitrary power, the most destructive of English liberty ever found in an English law book. And he said, and I quote, "I can sincerely declare that I cheerfully submit myself to every odious name for conscience' sake, and from my soul I despise all those whose guilt, malice, or folly has made them my foes. Let the consequences be what they will, I am determined to proceed." Those consequences, be as they will, amazingly enough, were the government charging James Otis Jr. with treason. See, he resigned his post, but then they forgot and charged him with abandoning his post, which is treason, which means he could have been shot on sight. James Otis Jr. would not be shot on sight. No, no, they would get a band of mercenaries to wait for him outside a restaurant as he was coming out by himself of a restaurant one night and try to beat him to death. Yeah, see, that's how the government does things. They don't bring you to trial. They just try to secretly assassinate you without any due process. Fortunate for James Otis Jr., they did not beat him to death, but they did beat him senseless. And he suffered brain damage that he would never get over. But James Otis Jr., before that beating, would bring his case to the courtroom and would argue for 5 solid hours against these writs of assistance. An amazing day in which the court would not even give him the courtesy of a ruling. You know, we have these writs of assistance today. They're called national security letters. And they're being enforced by the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, and by your local law enforcement against you. But you'll never know because there's a gag order. Come back. I want to show you the most amazing thing ever said about James Otis Jr. and liberty.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
James Otis Jr. loved his native country of England. And because he loved his country, he could not let his people suffer at the hand of an oppressive king. On February of 1761, James Otis Jr. argued in the State House for 5 hours that these writs of assistance were against English law and a violation of English liberty. James Otis Jr. told everyone that the writs of assistance were going to kill liberty and destroy the very basis for English law. He knew the most important kind of liberty was to be free and safe in your own home from government intrusion. He knew that the Bill of Rights of 1689 was a promise from the king to never search the people without a warning or without good reason. He knew that these warrantless searches were a violation of liberty. He knew that this oppressive king was breaking his promises, and James Otis Jr. had to stand against this tyranny, or liberty would be lost forever. Some people say what James Otis Jr. did was no big deal. I have read that in history books. Oh, well, he was not really a big important part of our history. But you know what? That's not what those who lived it said. John Adams wrote about this day 40 years later. He said, "But Otis was a flame of fire. with a promptitude of classical allusions, a depth of research, a rapid summary of historical events and dates, a profusion of legal authorities, a prophetic glare of his eyes into the future, and a rapid torrent of impetuous eloquence. He hurried away all before him. And then John Adams said, American independence was then and there born. This is February 1761, I'll remind you. American independence was then and there born. The seeds of patriots and heroes to defend the vigorous youth were then and there sown. Every man of an immense, crowded audience appeared to me to go away as I did, ready to take up arms against writs of assistance. Then and there was the first scene of the first act of opposition to the arbitrary claims of Great Britain. Then and there, the child of independence was born. And in 15 years, namely in 1776, that child grew up to manhood and declared himself free. James Otis Jr. stood for liberty, stood against unconstitutional laws, oppressive government. The people all around threatened him, lied about him, called him traitor, called him terrorist. But that didn't stop James Otis Jr. He decided that standing for liberty was more important than people liking him. He said the only thing that really mattered to a person who loved God and loved liberty was what he could do for the liberty of his country. After his argument against writs of assistance, James Otis Jr. would continue to fight for liberty. He was a leader for the Stamp Act Congress. He wrote several important patriotic pamphlets. And on September 12, 1768, James Otis Jr. gave a very important speech at a town hall meeting encouraging others to fight for liberty. He was not afraid of anything that man could do or say against him. He knew that liberty was a gift from God, and there is nothing more important than standing for the things that God has given to us. James Otis Jr. pledged his life, his home, his health, his reputation, even when people lied and called him names. And because of people like James Otis Jr., who loved liberty more than their lives, America was able to become an exceptional nation. And yet, we don't teach James Otis Jr. We deny him his due honor. We have historians who say what he did was not a big deal. Isn't it about time that we teach our children what real patriotism looks like? Well, when we come back after the break, we're going to talk about the first man who gave his life for our liberty movement. Can you name his name? Do you know his name? Do you know the date he died and what he died for? Do you know that there were others like him who died too? And when we come back, we'll learn that lesson that has been hidden from you in the progressive agenda.
My mom always said I was born for this, and some people wouldn't like that I was different. It never really mattered how hard it would be, cause she filled me with love and the strength to live. She said,
the Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Do you like this history that I'm teaching you? Is it history that you've never heard before or only have heard from me? Do you want to know more? Go to my website, chrisannhall.com, K-R-I-S-A-N-N-E-H-A-L-L.com. Go to the bookstore. Get a book called Essential Stories for Junior Patriots. Yes, it's written for high school and middle school students, but I'm going to tell you what, it's an easy read. And I teach from this book quite a bit, because this is the history that made us great. We need to put this book in the hands of all of our young people, because this history is something that they're being denied. Can you go? It's only $10. Can you go to the website today and order some for Christmas presents, perhaps, and help secure the liberty that was bought for us by teaching the truth and teaching things that they're not being taught, contrary to what they're being taught to school? The students that I teach, when I get to teach the students, they love the history lessons that I'm teaching them, because it's a dynamic history and they're so used to being bored to death with it. And they love hearing about these people. If you get this book and read this book to your children, or allow them to read it themselves, they will love it. I guarantee you, I have kids all over the country who write me and tell me that. I have homeschool groups who are using this book. I have Christian schools who are using this book. I have charter schools who are using this book. And I am proud to say that it is this history that is essential to knowing who we are, so that we will raise up generations of patriots who will know what we are supposed to be fighting for. So my question was, who was the first man who gave his life in this liberty movement? Well, his name is Crispus Attucks. Crispus Attucks was a whaler with the Merchant Marines who was docked at the Boston Harbor. One day there was a loud ringing of bells. Crispus Attucks thought there was a fire, and he ran out of his ship to find the bells that were calling the patriots to fight against the king. See, it was not a fire he was looking at. It was his own government picking up arms against his own people. Without a single thought of his own safety, Crispus Attucks ran back into the ship and got 55 of his shipmates to join him in this battle for liberty. Crispus Attucks knew that he had to fight for liberty. He used to be a slave. He knew that liberty was the most important thing he could possess. The British regular troops were waiting for them, and Crispus Attucks was shot and killed. He is the first patriot to die for the holy cause of liberty in America. As we learn about the history that makes America an exceptional nation, we cannot forget that there are men and women of color who gave their lives for us. They knew that an oppressive king would never let all men have liberty. An oppressive government would never let all men be free. And these men and women of color believed that liberty, and they believed that America was a place where all men could be created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. They picked up arms to help to overthrow the oppressive government, to restore liberty. And if we forget this part of our history, we will never understand the true meaning of American exceptionalism. These people were recognized for their bravery and their courage in their time. Crispus Attucks was honored. There's a poem written by Crispus Attucks in his day by a man named John Boyle O'Reilly. Honor to Crispus Attucks, who was leader and voice that day, the first to defy and the first to die with maverick car and gray. Call it riot or revolution, his hand first clenched at the crown. His feet were the first in perilous place to pull the king's flag down. His breast was the first one rent apart, that liberty's stream might flow. For our freedom now and forever, his head was first laid low. Call it riot or revolution, or mob or crowd as you may, such deaths have been seed of nations. Such lives shall be honored for a. Crispus Attucks was not the only black man to give his life for our liberty, to fight for our liberty. There were provisions among the states that said if you are a slave and you want to fight for liberty, you can be a free man forever. Interestingly enough, the British government was also arming the slaves, but telling them, you can fight, but you'll be a slave forever. There was a group of black men who formed a regiment called the Bucks of America, a militia from the state of Massachusetts. George Middleton was a free man and a black man. He volunteered to be a leader in the fighter for liberty. Middleton was given the rank of colonel in his army, called the Bucks of America. He continued to fight for liberty after the Revolutionary War by forming the African Benevolent Society of 1796, which provided assistance to widows and orphans from the Revolution. Peter Salem, a slave, told his master that he wanted to fight for liberty. Mr. Salem was declared a freeman because of his desire to fight for liberty. He joined the Continental Army. He fought at Bunker Hill, where he is remembered for shooting and killing a British major by the name of John Pitcairn. Many believe if it hadn't been for Peter Salem, Major Pitcairn would have won the battle. Peter Salem was so loved by the soldiers of New England that they gave Mr. Salem an award for his bravery, and he was introduced to General George Washington as a great hero. Peter Salem continued to fight for liberty and fought bravely in many battles. How about Ned Hector? Hector was another patriot of color who fought in the battles of Brandywine and Germantown. He is remembered for his bravery. When his military unit was being defeated and the order came to retreat, he refused to retreat. He didn't. You see, provisions were hard to come by for the patriots, and he knew that if he retreated, the enemy soldiers would have all their provisions. He said, "The enemy shall not have my team. I will save the horses or perish myself." He ended up saving his horses and getting a Medal of Honor from George Washington. How about Admiral Bernardo de Galvez? He was a great leader and fighter for liberty and the governor of Louisiana when it was owned by Spain. Admiral de Galvez smuggled items into the colonies to help the people fight for their liberty. He risked his life and his sailors to bring people gunpowder, muskets, uniform, medicine, and other supplies in violation of the laws of Great Britain. Before the country of Spain ever decided to help the colonists in the war, de Galvez was fighting in New Orleans for liberty. De Galvez captured a letter from the British government that told the king's generals exactly where to attack the colonists. De Galvez took this letter and quickly organized troops to defend the colonists. They were able to kick the British soldiers out of the Mississippi River, out of Mobile, Alabama. Admiral Bernardo de Galvez fought bravely for our colonists and helped to stop this tyrannical government. You see, how do we treat these valiant men? These minorities, as we would call them today. We deny them their honor. We deny them their place in history. Because we have to give a view of the Constitution that denies that minorities had a role to play in our liberty. Why do we have to do that? Because then we can teach our children, if we deny their role in all of this, we can teach our children that the Constitution was a document of oppression. That the Constitution made men property. No, I'm sorry, it wasn't the Constitution that called men property. That was the Supreme Court of the United States. You know, that one group of federal government that we have to honor above others as being infallible and being the ultimate arbiters of the universe called men property. No, our Constitution called men people. And it was our Constitution that ended slavery, not the war between the states. And it was men of color who gave their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor so we could be free. And if we knew this history and still deny it, we ought to be ashamed in our souls. Because you know what that means? There are some men who gave their only free breath so we could be free. How about we teach our children the truth for a change? How about we teach our children that the Constitution was not a document to oppress minorities and women? Because you see, the men were not the only people who sacrificed and fought for our liberty and for the formation of this union. To understand the fight for liberty, we have to know all the people who fought for us. Our founders, both men and women, knew that they were fighting to create a place where all would be equally free, they said, Jews, Turks, pagans, and Christians. They wanted to make a nation where all would be free for ages and millions yet unborn, Richard Henry Lee said. They were thinking about us. As we go about our days, do we think about them? They promised that they would sacrifice everything they had, even their own lives, just so we could live where we could enjoy liberty without being oppressed by our government. The women knew they had to stand for liberty, or their children would suffer. When these women saw the oppressive government and its violation of their liberty, they didn't worry about themselves, but they worried about their children and their grandchildren. One of these great women was a woman by the name of Penelope Barker, and she was the leader of the second Tea Party, you know, the Sons of Liberty through Tea in the Harbor. Penelope Barker pulled the women together just 10 months after the Sons of Liberty dumped tea in the harbor. Penelope Barker asked the women to join the fight against the oppression in name of liberty. She sent this message to her friends. Maybe it has only been the men who have protested the king up to now. That only means we women have taken too long to let our voices be heard. Hey, ladies out there. How many of you are afraid to be heard? Because you might lose your job or your friends might call you names. Why don't we take up the history of Penelope Barker?
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist. Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
On our Veterans Day, as we honor the men and women who gave their lives so we can be free, let us not forget those who gave the ultimate sacrifice to create a place worth fighting for. We're talking about the women now because Ginsburg and the feminazis want you to believe that the Constitution oppressed women, that our foundation was built by a bunch of rich white guys who hated everybody but themselves and their own money and were just trying to avoid paying their taxes, you know, their fair share. But it was not about taxes, it was about liberty. And I think it's about time we start teaching the truth instead of complaining about the lies that the government is teaching. Why don't we stop complaining about what our schools are teaching and start teaching the truth to our children so that they can go back to school and correct their teachers? That's always fun for them. Our women wept over what the king was doing to their liberty, over what Parliament was doing with their liberty. Penelope Barker said, maybe it's only been the men who have protested the king up to now. That only means we women have taken too long to let our voices be heard. They knew they had to stand. And women would join Penelope Barker in the home of Elizabeth King in Edenton, North Carolina, and make a pledge. A pledge that shows you just how brave and just how resolved they were. Think about this pledge when you think about what the feminazis want you to believe about the foundation of our country. We are signing our names to a document, not hiding ourselves behind costumes like the men in Boston did at their tea party. The British will know who we are. Did you hear that? They're calling out the men for being cowards hiding behind costumes and telling the British government we're signing our names because we ain't scared. What was more amazing about this? These were not women of no reputation. There were over 50 women who made this promise throughout the colonies. And these women carried the last names of men who were English merchants. You see, this pledge was that they would purchase no English-made goods until the laws that have enslaved their people are repealed. They declared that mandated purchases were slavery, and they said, "We will not comply." Mercy Otis Warren, my favorite founding mother, first American woman playwright. She wrote plays, Shakespearean-style plays, whose purpose was satire to poke fun at the British government and increase the following for the liberty movement. She's the first American woman historian. She wrote a 3-volume set called The Rise, Progress, and Termination of the American Revolution. She said, "I have to write this. I have an interesting perspective about this because I lived it." Abigail Adams would say about Mercy that she was a sincere lover of her country. She said Mercy was so grieved about the oppression that she wept over what her government was doing. Elizabeth Adams, the wife of Samuel Adams, had to leave her home and hide to protect her family, as many of the women did. Elizabeth and Sam Adams gave everything they had for liberty, and they didn't complain, because they were doing it for ages and millions yet unborn. Elizabeth would write a letter to Sam and say to him, "Please forgive my writing in this letter, for my paper is bad." They had to make their own paper. "And my pen is made from a broken pair of scissors." And then she explained to him how he shouldn't worry because they have an escape route. She had to write letters to her husband using a broken pair of scissors as a pen and live on the run because they believed liberty was more important than their lives. When they thought about what they were doing, they did not do that for themselves. They did it for us. Samuel Adams would write Abigail and say, "Posterity, you will never know what it costs this present generation to secure your liberty. I hope that you will make good use of it. For if you do not, I shall repent in heaven that I ever took half the pains to reserve it." What do you think about on this Veterans Day? Because they were thinking about us. It's time we stop denying them their honor, their place in history, start teaching our children the truth. Can you spend a few minutes today and override the government propaganda? Let's do this and honor those who came before us. God bless.